John Raymond, are you there?
Yes.
Take it away, John.
Over the years, I've heard most of Amy's stories many times, and vice versa. We had our little set pieces we trotted out, our old favorites we always found some new context to deploy. For me, the main ones were usually about traveling in Mexico when I was a teenager, seeing a dead body in the countryside outside Chiapas, bribing federales in Mexico City, and generally designed to make me seem at least mildly, if formerly, adventurous. For her, the big anecdotes were mostly comical. The one-night stand she'd spotted the next afternoon climbing out of a cop car in handcuffs, the drunken projectile vomiting at her sister's wedding, the time she tried burning a mole off her dog's stomach, thinking it was a deer tick. The number of airings she could squeeze out of her theory that humans would one day evolve tiny hands on the ends of their fingers in response to digital culture's ever smaller keyboard manipulations was kind of amazing. It was only in the last couple of years that I'd started hearing talk about her farming fantasy, though. It had started up sometime around the first American outbreak of mad cow disease, which had coincided with the appearance of the gorgeous rainbow chard at the local health food store. And by the end of the season, between the incredible frittatas she was making and the specter of cannibal cows, she was an evangelist for the glories of small-scale agriculture. There's the first two paragraphs.
Hi, John.
Hi.
That's the voice of John Raymond, and he's reading from his new novel, Rain Dragon. John, I'm going to do a little dust jacket bio on you right now.
Very good.
All right. John Raymond, he's the author. His first novel was called The Half-Life, and he's also wrote a short story collection called Livability, the winner of the 2009 Ken Casey Award for Fiction. He wrote several films based on his stories, Old Joy, Wendy and Lucy, and Meek's Cut Off, and was the co-writer of the Emmy-nominated screenplay for the HBO miniseries Mildred Pierce. And that was an early passage from your new book, Rain Dragon.
Exactly.
John, tell us about this young couple, Damon and Amy, who have had it with Los Angeles and are leaving for the farm up in Oregon.
These two characters embody a pretty common narrative here in the Northwest these days. They've moved to the region to reinvent themselves and start some kind of new life in a more purposeful and meaningful fashion. The main engine of their particular voyage is Amy. I think she's the more proactive of the two. Damon is kind of along for the ride, although he's the narrator of the book. And they arrive at a small organic farm called Rain Dragon in the Cascade Mountains and proceed to live their new lives. Amy takes to it pretty quickly, whereas Damon is, he's less interested in the labor of farming, and he ends up sort of diverging from the farm work. And it's just kind of about how their respective visions of the future either coincide or don't, and how they go about finding work that they find satisfying in some way. I mean, it seems like a problem almost everyone I know has, like how to deal with your love life and how to find work that you can enjoy.
John, I was definitely curious, and I'm sure you've gotten this at some of your readings, whether you had checked out any of the farms up in your area when you were putting together this book, if there was a model for Rain Dragon is the name of the organic farm in the book. Yeah.
There's a, it was sort of, in my fantasy world, it was kind of very mildly based on the dairy farm called Nancy's here in Oregon, which is a kind of a famous regional brand of yogurt. It's also the farm that was coincidentally founded by Ken Kesey's brother. It's kind of the Kesey family farm, and it's a place where back in the 70s the Grateful Dead would play, and it has a distinct countercultural profile here in town. I didn't really go there and visit it, but I have certainly visited my share of little organic farms here in town and all around it. They're kind of ubiquitous in this area these days, which is great. It's good. We have good food here now because of it.
You know, it was actually Melinda, who's also joining us, had pointed out to me that one of the common threads between the characters in this book and, say, what's going on in Old Joy, as well as Wendy and Lucy in a way, is you have these characters who suddenly find themselves confronted with, they're extremely self-aware, and then they find themselves sort of confronted with the natural world, but somewhat ill-equipped for survival.
Right.
And I wonder if you'd thought about, if you were aware of that as like a running thread through some of the, mostly in the stories, the contemporary stories you tell, not the ones that are...
although in a way I guess that it certainly applies to Meek's Cutoff too. I mean, they're confronted with a very baseline survival problem there too. I haven't thought about it that consciously. I mean, maybe it is something that is something I've been drawn to. I think that I'm interested in people with practical problems in a certain way. Like, these are often self-aware people, and they're fairly articulate about themselves and their own needs and desires and everything, but I do always like to present the characters with like real intractable problems that have a material kind of base, you know? I find myself more sympathetic to that kind of problem than just like an emotional problem, you know? Like, I like them to have real
people who have to pay the rent somehow.
Yeah, you know, exactly. That's a problem I can relate to. Totally.
So, I don't want to be the spoiler in terms of the plot, but it winds up being the case that Amy winds up being fairly contented because she finds a place, her kind of niche in the beekeeping shed.
Yes. Right.
Damon has a harder time finding it until he comes under the sway of this sort of charismatic, it's not appropriate to call him a guru. He was the founder of the farm, this guy, Peter Hawk.
Right.
And he finds out that Damon's got a background in advertising. And so he sort of takes Damon under his wing because he's interested in marketing, not only marketing Rain Dragon's products, but also Rain Dragon's ethos.
Exactly. I mean, I think to call Peter a guru is not entirely inaccurate. I mean, in as much as the title of guru has become so free-floating at this point, I mean, I think especially on the West Coast, capitalism has developed in a way that there's a whole bracket of a whole consultant class that, you know, fashions themselves as kind of inspirational gurus of some kind. It is a whole realm of endeavor here. And I think that Peter is like an aspiring guru in the way, and you know, in thinking about him, the founder, I was thinking about people like, you know, like Steve Jobs or Jobs or Larry Ellison, or in particular there's a guy named like Paul Hawken, who is the founder of Smith and Hawken. There's just a whole like formerly countercultural world of guys who I think have turned their kind of shtick into business.
Right, and I think Peter Hawk believes that the systems they've created there on the Rain Dragon Farm, the management and the way they've found a way of working with each other, has something to teach the corporate world.
Right. I mean, there is a kind of philosophical and spiritual element to a lot of these ideas that are generated inside of like organizational management discourse. And I say this, I guess I should also mention that my dad was an organizational management consultant, and so a lot of this book in some ways is dealing with that and like sitting around at dinner tables, you know, talking about mission statements and drawing Enneagram diagrams and actually getting into some fairly esoteric terrain through just ideas about corporate management, you know, and that is, I think it's at this point we're generations into that that discourse, and then so for me, part of the idea of this book was just setting something in that world and in that language, and actually, and further, I guess taking it seriously in a way, like trying not to. I think one of the possible oddities of this book is that it is not a satire of that kind of world, but it's actually treating some of these new agey ideas with a fairly straightforward demeanor and trying to find out how these things really do help people articulate their inner desires and how they do help people fabricate a sense of destiny in their lives.
No, I know we mentioned we corresponded a little bit, and I told you that I loved the book. But you were very clear that you didn't want to drift, even though both worlds, both the world on the farm and the jargon on the farm and the corporate management jargon are ripe for parody, that you were very determined that it not sort of drift into this.
Yeah, I mean, that had been the goal I set really at the beginning. I mean, so many people do parody it, you know, I mean, whatever, what was that like? There's that movie just a few weeks ago that came out, the, like, Wanderlust or something, I haven't seen it yet, the Paul Rudd one, where it's like a couple that ends up on some groovy commune, and it turns out to be some sex cult or something, and it's all very funny. And, I mean, I feel like we've seen the satire of that stuff ad nauseum, and I just... But there is something about it that continues to speak to people and that gets to maybe even has supplanted more traditional religious kinds of institutions, at least in this part of the country. And yeah, I just wanted to. I mean, it made the book a more difficult one to write, I think, because. In researching it and in writing it, like, I mean, my regard for a lot of that New Age discourse just got less and less. I mean, a lot of it is just utter garbage, but I just wanted to, like, do it. I just wanted to not, just to try not to judge for as long as I could in there. And that was a rule I tried not to break.
It's actually, I mean, I was wondering if going around reading, if you've been getting the Portlandia question, right? I mean,
oh,
that's like
yeah.
the broadest satire
I mean,
of the
is,
world
yeah,
out there. And it's just like, it's like shooting ducks in a barrel because, you know, I've only seen the show a few times, but it seems like they go after the most obvious. It's broad and kind of obvious.
It's pretty broad. It's also pretty gentle, you know, I mean, it's not a very vicious kind of satire that they're doing. But it is totally, I mean, yeah, there are big targets, and what's interesting is that it's interesting that they found such a national and even international audience, because clearly those big targets that exist in Portland exist everywhere to some degree, like there's some elements of Portland everywhere, but definitely that show has, at this point, become like the defining idea of Portland, which is great. I mean, I think I'm excited that Portland has generated an idea for what it is. I mean, as someone who grew up here, I always thought of Portland as like the antithesis of an idea. So at least we have like an idea, even if it is, you know, clowns riding bikes, drinking coffee or something. But yeah, it is. I mean, that ends up being the thing that people bounce us off of. And I think that's part of what can be confusing to people is, you know, like, how do you return, after a thing has been satired to that degree, how do you kind of return to that material with, like, a more sober eye? I mean, not that this is, like, a serious or sober book. It's meant to be comic on a certain level, but not on the most obvious level.
Maybe it's an East Coast, West Coast thing. You know, we have a lot of young farmers on this radio station. We had an ag show just on the air at 3 o'clock with two young farmers from a CSA here. And but from what I heard of the show, and I was getting my oil changed at the time, so I was tuned into the radio, and there was no philosophy. They weren't talking abstract ideas. They were extremely practical about, like, price point on their vegetables, you know?
Yeah.
And
no,
could
I mean,
they get a fair price?
That's how most of it goes, too. That's how most of it goes. I mean, that... but I was interested in kind of an intellect... I mean, I think it is a distinctly West Coast intellectual tradition. I mean, it kind of begins with... I mean, I think of it as beginning back with, like, the Whole Earth Catalog or something, and going through a lot of the Silicon Valley entrepreneurial stuff, and definitely residing in modern farming. It's it's not something that everyone indulges in, and it's not something that is ubiquitous. But I think it's definitely undergirding a lot of reasons why people decide to go do what they're doing.
I hear the little Raymonds in the background.
I
want
to
meet them.
Hey, Eliza, can I do that with you in a second? Eliza was very brave today. She had 2 shots at the doctor and barely cried at all. Oh, 3 shots. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, they just stabbed her right in the leg. Okay, we can continue. I'm sorry. Very unprofessional here.
Anything?
I very much love the idea of the conversations around organizational development being the stuff of drama, the stuff of novels. I think it's totally brilliant.
Usually I start telling people about this and I can even feel like my own eyes glazing over because it's hard to like, it turns out it's a hard thing to fictionalize in a compelling way, but I feel like it's important to try because it is a form that is so I mean, so many people have some experience with it, and I think that often, well, or at least conceivably, like profound things happen in those conversations and in those spaces. You know, like I feel like it is something that needs to be depicted. And
so much of the failure and success of even the most utopian ideals comes down to how people are able to communicate with each other, or a hierarchy, or who's doing which role, and stuff like that.
No, and it gets down to very deep things about, like why you want to work, like what you consider to be good work, like how you communicate, whether true communication is even possible. It is sort of the way people talk about their principles in a corporate atmosphere at this point, I think it's at this point it's definitely like here to stay. I don't think it's like a new thing anymore.
It would be fun to read business plans, thinking about them as distillations of people's like biggest dreams and deepest desires. And
I think the good guru guys are like they're actually pretty explicit about that. You know, like that is, you know, when that's the real goal, and in some ways it can almost run counter to the kind of capitalist enterprise, you know? I mean, I think there are certain of these guru guys that would like to turn organizations into, like, a big sweat lodge or something, and just purely concentrate on human development without any kind of production of anything going on.
I was working for a farmer who was out here who has a small vegetable farm and was really determined to find some alternate sources of revenue, and he was convinced that his farm would be the site of a really amazing reality TV show. And he was pitching, he's a sort of young hunky guy with a hunky boyfriend, and he was really certain that they could be stars, and so he was pitching the show to a couple different TV producers, and when they were pushing him to figure out like where is the conflict here and where is the drama,
he's got the villain thread.
He was saying like my business plan is in flux. my money woes are so real. Like, what do you mean, where's the drama?
It is. It's absolute human drama. And it's like, it's a really hard thing to get at in a, like, dramatic fashion. Like, I mean, I would love to watch that reality TV show. I think that could be totally amazing if they could just dispense with all the boring, like, reality TV isms and just concentrate on his business plan. I would find that fascinating. That would be an amazing doc.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to John Raymond talk about his new book, Rain Dragon. You have to go out and buy this book there I'm pitching for you, because I read it in 2 days. It was really quick. I don't think I'm not supposed to pitch on a non-commercial station, but I'm doing it anyway, John. Are you going to come out this way sometime soon and read? Give us a reading?
I don't have any plans to at the moment, but should anything bring me out there, I will certainly set up readings. Okay. Yeah.
And what about, is this one, are you and Kelly talking about doing something with this one? Because I could see this movie. I want to see
really?
This
That's
movie.
Oh, really? That's funny. This one seems like a weird movie to me. No, that is not in talks. We do have a different script that, God willing, will get to get made that also does kind of take place on an organic farm. It has some organic farm locations in it, but it's about some eco-terrorists who go blow up a hydroelectric dam. It's in some ways, I think of it as being related to this thing, but it's a much more exciting caper kind of version of this.
Well, John Raymond, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join
WGXE
on the Monday afternoon show.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.